Chapter 51. Darrow. Midnight lands. We arrived on Io and found it too dangerous to risk an approach. For 3 days we waited inside Io's orbit in the cover provided by Jupiter's faint ring system and magnetosphere as storms the size of Earth raged beneath. We circled Jupiter, matching pace with Io's orbit, watching streams of transport ships depart until the Pandora and 3 Valk dreadnoughts slipped away from the moon with most of the Valk navy toward Callisto. When they disappeared around the curve of Jupiter, I told Cassius it was time to make our approach. Virginia always thought it a strange perversity that so many of Jupiter's moons were named after women or goddesses Zeus raped, and then graced with the ultimate torture, to be held under his gaze for eternity. From what I've seen of our journey into inner Ilium, far has been no kinder to the moons than Zeus was to his conquest. Io floats alone beneath us. A ruin. Its defences have been smashed. Its cities razed. Their smoke weeps upward to join the columns that pour out from Io's 400 volcanoes. It seems only the equator was spared Far's wrath. For good reason. There, an uninterrupted belt of green and gold pulses with life amidst a hellish landscape riven with volcanoes and desolate frozen sulphur wastes. Demeter's Garter, the breadbasket of the Rim. Infrastructure is crucial, perhaps more crucial, than the dockyards of Ganymede I destroyed 12 years ago. Not all of Far's fleet has departed. Hundreds of strange warships that could only be Askamani-made gather over the Garter along with caravans of cosmos haulers. I cannot help but be impressed. Of the 4 Galilean moons, Europa, Io, Callista, and Ganymede, Far took the hardest and innermost moon first. It is exactly what I would have done. Gain space supremacy by defeating the Ra Navy, eliminate their moon defense bases, then capture the Garter to grip their whole civilization by the windpipe. Now that another leader has done it, the brutality of the act required seems a sin against humankind. The consequences of the Garter's loss will stretch far beyond Ilium to affect Rim civilization all the way to Pluto. More and more, Far feels like my shadow, that darker part of myself that knows the shortest route often lies through the ruthless application of brutality. Even Severo does not laugh this time. Ori's lack of celebration when we saw the devastation around Kaliki was because she feared exactly this. She was right to, and Severo was right to worry that Athena and her fabled ships may no longer exist. Still, we didn't come all this way to turn back now. We need to contact Athena, and the only way to do that is to light Ori's Omega Torch in Sungrave. Io is about the size of Luna, and tidally locked. One side always faces Jupiter. The moon is pulled in a constant tug-of-war between the gravity of Jupiter and the other Galilean moons. This creates tectonic movement, so Io is constantly bleeding fire from her heart. Some of her volcano plumes spew as much as 500 kilometers out into space. Using one of these to mask our entry to the moon, we slip through Askamani patrols and descend toward the South Pole. I am extremely wary of putting the Archimedes at risk by approaching Sungrave directly. Surface-to-air missiles, either from Ra guerrillas or Far's forces still on the moon, are as much a risk to the ship as enemy fighters or capital ships. So I have Cassius set down several hundred kilometers southeast of the city, in a volcano range on the edge of the anti-Jovian wastes of Naramore. The spews and volcanic activity will hide our ship, hopefully. While Cassius stays behind with Lyria, Ori, and our mute prisoner Diomedes, I head to the cargo bay to gear up and disembark. Ori passes me in the hall and tosses me a hair tie. "Been a long road since the Marcher," she says, as I tie my hair up. "Be careful." I bump fists with her and descend into the cargo bay. Severo is there waiting, already dressed. I did not know if he was coming, but it seems he's decided to step up after all. I give him a nod, and he helps me into the Godkiller armor. I skip the small talk and show him our route. The direct approach takes us through a briar patch of mountains and volcanoes. Anything could hide there, and we can't afford to get shot down. If our oxygen reserves run out, the sulfur dioxide in Io's thin air will react with the water in our lungs to form a strong acid. So we will head due west to the waste of Carrick, then curve back toward the city on the seam between the mountains and the waste. Here, just south of Darkfall. Complaints? He shakes his head. You're better in boots. I suggest fly-hopper interchange. But you're flight master. I'll take your lead. Helm up. Boots prime. Let's do it. The ramp lowers, and we step out into the dimness. Severo and I fly from meager sunshine over plains painted shades of yellow, red, black, green, and white, toward midnight lands where Jupiter hangs in the sky, supreme, mutinous, and huge. From the surface of the moon, Jupiter subtends an arc of 19.5 degrees, appearing 39 times the apparent diameter of Luna from Earth's surface. Even the many mountains of Io, some rising higher than Earth's Everest, seem small in comparison. We wind through the teeth of mountain passes, over vast sulfur plains and burping lava flows, until the moon slips into Jupiter's shadow. The celestial event, where Jupiter blocks Io from the sun completely, occurs every 42 hours. Surface temperatures drop so low, all sulfur on the moon turns to frost. The Ionians call it Nival Night. The darkness grows Stygian, broken only by the glow of volcanoes, the throbbing of molten silicate lava lakes, and the blinking lights of high-altitude Ascomani patrols. If there is rim resistance to the Ascomani, we do not see any signs of it, and that's all the better. Dustwalkers, obsidians, Ascomani. Those are my fears in descending order. We alternate between sprints of low-altitude flight and hopping in our gravity boots. We pause at random intervals, and Severo peers into the blackness of the mountains or the shrouds of volcano plumes as if they concealed legions. There is no better scout in my army than Severo, save a few of Valdir's lads, but we are warm landers, soft worlders, and I feel even Severo's fear. An hour into our journey west, we reach the waste of Carrick. Over that barren plain, weird tentacles of light molest the sky. They are charged particles flowing off Jupiter to form auroras. They stain the frozen sulfur crystals, mutating shades of violet, cerulean, and green. Daring young blues, styled air dancers, from Darkfall and Nightmorn, used to sail those auroras with homemade Daedalian wings. Girls have bones far too heavy for the sport. No blues dance in the sky tonight. I wonder aloud to Severo if any blues will ever dance here again. He does not answer or care. In the 8 days since his fight with Cassius, Severo has barely been seen, choosing to camp out and sleep in the machine shop or the escape pod and take his meals in private. I hoped for a new start after he revealed his grief for Ulysses. Perhaps I was too hard on him. Or I was too optimistic. But even if he's gone silent, he is no longer pulling the team apart. He comments on Quick's armor, though, and that's something. Shame we didn't have this 10 years ago, he says of the new gear. I don't disagree. The gear is light, fast, stealthy, without sacrificing power, and its updated generator can run the suit for days. It has 3 modes for power usage. Typical of Quick, they all have dumb names. Reptile, to run cold for stealth, lupine, for regular use, and titan, to kill gods, apparently. We've only dared try reptile mode. Our juice runs out here. We're dead. Severo grows somber as we pass the city of Darkfall. Unlike many of the large mass moons, Io was never terraformed. The moon and its air are still hostile to life. Life has been able to stubbornly survive here only beneath the surface of the moon or under the paradomes. those domes that once harbored precious oxygen and sheltered the citizens of Darkfall from Jupiter's radiation bombardment, have now been shattered. The city, once famed for its orators, sopranists, and philosophy, lies quiet and cold as we pass. It is as if their stoic people have been eaten by the dark itself. I think of the transport ships that we saw trickling away from Io when we arrived, and know now what cargo they carried. Men, women, children, bound for some frigid asteroid city far beyond the bounds of civilization. I can scarcely imagine what awaits them there. Even in Lycos, little trickles of hope made their way into the mines. Whispers about Ares, beams of sunlight. I fear the captives of Io will receive no such inspiration. My chest grows tight after thinking of their fate. If they are truly my enemies, then why do I want to weep?